Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I'm a reporter, editor, writer for ArizonaSports.com. Joining me under that same title is Kevin Zimmerman. We run a blog called The Empire of the Suns, where we talk about the Phoenix Suns, and we have a podcast where we talk about the Phoenix Suns called The Empire of the Suns Podcast. That's what you're listening to right now. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
I just realized your hello there reminds me of, like, Obi-Wan when you first see him in A New Hope. Is that where that's from? I don't know why I thought
What if that's very, like, a very subconscious thing about me that once I get a shrink, they're going to come up, once I'm rich enough to afford a shrink, they're going to talk about it in, like, 3 years and be like, you have some, like, Obi-Wan vibes going right now? It's like, oh, my God, I say hello there at the start of every podcast. Oh, my goodness. Speaking of, there's no way to link in Obi-Wan and the Suns right now. There is probably, but I'm rusty today. I can't do it. Where we're going to start is Isaiah Cannon was released. My thought on this was the Suns told him, and we haven't podcasted for about 9 or 10 days, so we missed the four-game run where he was abysmal. He shot 2 of 17 on the road trip, I believe. And my thought on his play overall was the way people thought Isaiah Cannon was actually playing, the level of the bad that he was playing at. That's a good way to say it.
The level of bad.
The level of bad that he was at was actually how he played in those 4 or 5 games. I think the Suns went to him and said, hey, we're going to play the kids. And he said, okay, I'll leave now. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Because keeping him on the roster makes a ton of sense. They have 2 open roster spots now. Everyone was thinking trade because of that. I just took it as a player who wants to go play elsewhere. He doesn't want to spend the entire season on the end of the bench, because he's done a lot of that in his NBA career so far. That sounded like a shot. It's not. It's just that's where he's been in a lot of stages of his career, and I think he just wants to play.
The biggest problem with him was just what he couldn't do on offense, which is crazy because it's almost like they made a bad decision when you look back at it. They basically had to choose between him and Shaq Richardson.
Shaq Harrison, yes.
Oh, my God.
We are both not great today.
Ooh.
Get it together, podcast. All right, let's restart it. Let's not tell them. I was kidding. You looked at me like I was serious, and you're like, yeah, we should.
Yeah. I was like, yeah.
All right, Shaq Harrison.
Shaq Richardson was a cornerback for there. Wildcat, so at least he's a real person.
He was not good.
I'm chugging a monster. So Shaq Harrison. Look, they had to choose between him and Isaiah Cannon at the beginning of the year. Shaq is leading the NBA. I just randomly found this in deflections per 36, and it's like per 36, it's 6.3 or something ridiculous. The next player on that list is like at a 4 point something. Mikal Bridges is at like a 2 point something. So Shaq's like this possibly elite NBA defender. Has his offensive flaws, but Isaiah turns out also had all those flaws. Like, if he's not hitting his jumper, like just a set jumper, he's almost useless. That's a little harsh. He tried on defense. He might have gotten away with being called average on some nights against backups, but
those nights started to fade in the past 2 or 3 weeks as well.
So after that, it's like, this is where you realize that there are limitations, and that's when you look at a guy who's kind of reached how good he's going to be at basketball, which is still a very good player, end of the bench NBA player, but it's not good enough on this team.
It basically came down to his contributions being so little that even Okobo and Melton's second round point guards who are just not going to be, it would be unheard of, unprecedented nearly, for them to turn out to be average to above average NBA point guards in their rookie year as second round picks. It almost never ever happens. They're almost always bad. But with that being said, stylistically, Okobo gives you someone who can do things off the dribble and can shoot. Melton gives you someone who has a signature skill, his defense. Kanan doesn't offer any of those things. What he offers is experience, but his play did not reflect that.
And I mean, it's came down to skill set too, where even if he knew what he was doing, he can't execute. Like, he can't attack, he can't threaten, he can't do things that, like, Okobo did last night, which was just hit wide-open jumpers. Like, Kanan was struggling with that, and once that goes, it's like, we can't use you. Like, this team, no matter where Book's playing, like, you need a guy to hit jumpers, at the very least, playing off Book. If Book's going, last night, against a very good defensive team, the Clippers, like, Book was on, like, just getting locked down, and that's not even something that, you know, maybe when he gets to, if he ever gets to Harden or Kobe level, maybe you can say, hey, you should be able to shake that, those guys, but if he's getting locked down like that, you gotta have someone else to just dribble the ball and initiate stuff and let them suck in on Booker and try to get stuff elsewhere.
Closing thoughts on Kanan being released. What do they do with these two roster spots? Everyone pretty much forgot that they had an open roster spot when Tyson Chandler got bought out. Oh, by the way, they have another two-way contract. Maybe use that?
They're not using any of them.
They're not using any of them, and that is on the list of things that I wrote a Markelle Fultz thing, which we're going to get into later. That's on the list of things where you look at this front office and just what's gone on since McDonough was fired, and get another two-way guy, it won't hurt. Get another guy on the end of the bench, it wouldn't hurt to get them in as soon as... But are they looking across the entire free agent list of guys and saying, we don't need any of those guys?
It's concerning because, like, you look at, like, a football roster, and they're always churning, like, the practice squad.
The Cardinals just did it today, yeah.
And what you do in those situations is you're making a move and it's a domino effect. You waive someone to elevate someone, and then you already know when you do that immediately, you know, I'm going to promote this guy after I waived someone that opened a spot, and then I'm going to sign another guy to that other guy's practice squad spot. So it's like the Suns don't even appear, we could be wrong, but they don't appear at this moment to have a list of guys they're interested in who might be worth taking flyers on.
You know who would kind of be in the lead discussion of this is someone like Pat Connolly, who is the assistant GM. He got fired. The head of scouting for this team got fired. And the general manager got fired. All of those people who got fired were filled in on an interim basis by other people. So what's happening is those people are trying to do two jobs at once right now. I don't know what James Jones was doing as vice president of basketball operations on a day-to-day basis compared to what a general manager does every day. But at the same time, you should be filling these positions, and when something like this happens, that's what you think about. The other thing that I don't understand about these open roster spots is they already have roster spots right now that are filled by guys who they are basically saying, we're not playing these guys.
Yeah.
Ryan Anderson or Dragan Bender theoretically would help this team right now with how much they need. If you're looking across roster and you just want to switch things up and give other guys opportunities, yes, Ryan Anderson started the year. Yes, Dragan Bender had a moment here or there. But effectively, what we've learned from this opening 20 games is those guys aren't going to play.
Yeah.
They're not going to play. Troy Daniels is not going to play. Maybe they need him on an emergency basis at some point looking forward, but they already have three of those roster spots taken by guys who basically aren't going to play. So if another injury goes down or another injury happens there, now you're down to nine guys effectively. Now
Daniel House just got signed, by the way.
Yeah. I don't understand it. There's a rule. You have to have 14 guys within 2 weeks of doing something like this. So they have to add someone by rule. And I'm not going to come out and say it's because they don't want to spend the money, but what other conclusion can you come from by not adding to the end of the roster?
I don't know.
Thanks, Kevin. I agree with you. Phoenix Suns 2018-19 season. I don't know.
Let's turn to the on-court product, which is, you mentioned the guys who aren't playing, but the guys who are in this rotation, and we're finally seeing some good stuff from Igor Kokoshkov's system. We're seeing continuity, at least. Wins aren't quite there yet. Is there any, like, takeaway from them looking not miserable the last five games?
I think it's important to establish the last time we talked was the start of Point Book, and I think what we discussed was there are limitations to this, yada yada, but this is the best short-term solution for now. What has become apparent in the past 3 to 4 games, especially losses like the Pacers game when they didn't have Victor Oladipo, and even the loss to the Clippers, was there is a capped ceiling on this group.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the case for every roster, but I do not think this roster, if you keep this roster the same, don't make any trades, don't make any big time or even acquire anyone who will factor into the rotation for the rest of the season, you're going to win 20 games, 22, 23 games. They're 4-17 right now. They're on pace for 16, 15 wins right now. They are improving. They are getting better. This is not a negative Nancy thing. It's not meant to be that. But what we're saying is when you beat the Bucks, it's a great win. It's a great win no matter what happened on the court. With that being said, the Bucks shot 10 of 44 from three. They missed at least 15 wide open threes. Brooke Lopez missed 12 of them on his own.
Yeah.
And Giannis was 14 of 16 from the field. It was one of those baffling things I've seen all season, was the Bucks just not giving him the ball every possession because all of his makes were either layups or dunks. He was getting to the rim at will. And I came away from that saying, great win. They competed. They fought really hard. The effort is clearly there. But that's not a lucky win, but they were fortunate. There are 95 outcomes where the Bucks win that game. This was one of the five where the Suns win the game. So with that being said, I still maintain, even with the way that they're playing, that they need to make a move during the season. And it's interesting. Someone brought up to me what we were talking about when Ryan McDonough got fired, and I was on the hardcore stance that I believed that a move was coming quickly based on what happened. I don't believe that anymore, obviously, because it didn't come to fruition. But at the same time, I'm starting to think that December 15th and the date they can trade Trevor Ariza is holding some significance. That's kind of what I replied to them in saying maybe that's it. But at the same time, people are acting like the Suns can just trade Trevor Ariza and it's not going to make them worse. I don't know why people are acting like they can just get rid of Trevor Ariza right now and nothing worse will come on the court for them. He helps them in a lot of ways. They can't just trade him for a first round pick in January. And I know like a first round pick is valuable and everything, but if all you're getting back for him is a draft pick and nothing substantial, if it's just like a late first round pick or whatever, I don't see the point in doing it, because he helps what you're doing right now. And especially defensively, Brendan Clean hit on this a couple of times during the Clippers game. The Suns are doing good defensive things over a stretch of games for the first time in I don't know how long. And that is important to build on and important to sustain.
Yeah.
And I think in order to do that, it's human nature and just the way the NBA goes. When you lose this many games in a row, the effort, the Jay Triano, we saw the same sort of bump for this team in this similar type of way. It wasn't gradual improvement. It was a spike out of nowhere. But what happened was, and what we said on this podcast last year, let's see what happens when they lose 5 out of 7, 6 out of 8. Is this going to continue? It did not. They fell off a cliff in January, February, March. So I'm interested to see where this goes if they keep losing. Are they going to keep up this level of effort and keep up this level of improvement? Because it's terrific to see. But where does it actually go? Does it lead to actual improvement in the win total? I can't really come up with a conclusion on it. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that that's going to be why Igor's job is so hard. He's gotten over a little hump, which was convincing these guys to listen to him and that what he's teaching them is going to work if you give it time. And so on both ends, they've seen improvement. Like, let's just go to the Clippers game. Like, they were switching everything. The defense was very basic in that way. But that was different than other games, I believe. And they execute it mostly well. And then your offense in just a quarter and you lose it. And that's how the game ends. The Pacers game, a game before that, kind of the same thing. The second unit was abysmal when it first came on the floor in the first half. And then he connects with them after. And there was a little shift with TJ Warren playing with the bench, and him, he was already hot, but it was still like good to see that he can make a little adjustments in the game that improves things and that his team holds attention with him. So I just want to get back to the Trevor Ariza thing too. Like, he's kind of like Kanan in a way where he's the things he can't do hurt him. And that's showed up less because they've done less moving the ball so much, less putting him in pick and rolls, which was not going well early in the season. And it's been a lot more Booker. And look, I don't think you can trade him anyway because his contract's so huge. It's like, what? How can you deal that and get something in return unless it's like a fellow expiring?
15 million, yeah.
Why would you trade an expiring for an expiring? Like, I don't, there might be an answer there or a swap that makes sense. So I think he's on this team. Like, if he gets traded, you can come back and tell me, Kevin, you were wrong. So what they have now is what you said, that capped team where you hope the effort holds. But when we talk about it being capped, you still have to go back to Booker. And maybe it's because they played the Pacers and the Clippers the last two games, but we saw Booker, well, the Bucks game too, where Booker just locked down on him. They send one guy at him. Don't even worry about team defense. Just play in his chest. And what happens then is, look, Jamal Crawford has to do something. Elie Okobo has to knock down shots. And then it becomes a game. And, you know, we see him having bad numbers, but it actually is helping the team, which is the interesting part. But then you're like, it's capped because then it's like, Elie Okobo, take us to a win. And it's not going to happen against the best team in the West last night.
It was one of those games where it's really great to be the Clippers on some nights with their roster construction, because Avery Bradley was, I think, the first guy that was doing that to Booker. And whenever he was out or whenever someone else was in, for the most part, it was, oh, we got this 18-year-old kid from Canada. He's super long and annoying, too. We'll send him over there. We didn't even see Patrick Beverley in that game. He could have been that guy. I don't know if he's hurt right now or something, but...
last night?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he play last night?
Yeah, he was chirping a lot.
He did play last night? This is what happens when I watch games while I'm on the web desk. Oh, gosh.
I was going to say, like, real quick aside, we were talking about the Suns trading for him. One, he looks really healthy. Two, maybe Shea will be good enough where they're like, I guess, get rid of Pat Bed. But also, if they're first in the Western Conference, they probably aren't going to make a trade.
Yeah, shout out to the Clippers for looking at their backcourt and how many guys they have and still believing... We really like this kid and think he's going to be good. We don't care if we have four point guards or like five guards.
See,
who deserve
it can
to play.
Work.
It can work. It can
don't
work.
Trade them all.
To go back to Booker, yesterday was weird because he was not on the injury report. And then all of a sudden he's doubtful because of a left big toe injury. And then he played anyway. It'll be interesting to see. I believe the notes actually came out today. I didn't look to see.
Did he have a toe injury like 2 years ago or last year?
He had a right big toe injury last year.
Great.
Yeah, so all his big toes are gone. He is a guy who just racks up these little injuries. That's what he is right now. And that is going to continue, in my opinion, if he... Wherever he plays, it might continue. But I'm saying that him playing point guard is not going to help. That Pacers game, he played his butt off defensively. It was maybe his best defensive game ever. And what happens? He kind of falls apart in crunch time at the very end because used all my legs on the defense. And that's just the way it's going to go.
Plus, they were blitzing the crap out of
him. They were.
Like, Nate McMillan's another really good defensive team that didn't really have like what you thought of as a superstar. And they definitely didn't have Oladipo the other night. But they had a really good scheme where he was trying to make the right passes in the first half. He got 7 assists. And then after that, it was just like, they're done even letting him pass. They were done letting him have the ball. And that's where somehow the Suns got a great effort from the bench unit. But it remains to be seen if that can happen consistently. Although, two games in a row, like, the bench has done what it needs to do to keep the Suns in the game for the most part. Well, I shouldn't say that. I guess there were big holes in that effort, but there were also positives. So if you bring out the positives, make that consistent, then maybe. But yeah, it's just you're asking a lot out of a lot of people who aren't Devin Booker.
Yeah, to wrap on that and look at the recent progression the past couple of games, Okobo, Jackson Holmes, I think we should hit on them. I was rambling there for a bit, and people are going to hate what I was saying, but to put it more succinctly, cap ceiling with Booker, I don't think they can win beyond 23, 24 games this season if this is the current roster. You're putting more wear and tear on Booker. It's worrying to see him pop up on the injury report so soon after giving him this point book, and most importantly, it's showing in the games. I've been tweeting out clips here and there and just little moments in the game where it's clear that his rhythm and feel and court sense are taking a hit because of how much extra he is doing. It's already enough for him to deal with the extra defensive pressure as a scorer, but then asking him to completely change his role, which is what's happening. His role is completely changed on this team. Don't let the point book and him playing quote-unquote point guard sound minimalistic. It's not. He's doing a ton more and being asked to
be
the only.
He's been very good.
He's been very good, too. That's a surprising thing.
Yeah. I should have brought this up earlier, but I think we shouldn't overlook how much more of a playmaker and how much better he looks. Like, if we're talking incremental growth between all of his seasons, we might be at the most growth between his third and fourth season. I mean, you can argue with me on that. I'm not sure if I'm correct, but to me, he's changed the most as a, like, when you think of an identity of a player this year.
And the best part is the stats say he's being more inefficient and going back to what Twitter thinks he is. So it's going to be a really fun year again of dealing with this crap.
But yeah, that's why they went and got Elfrid Payton last year, because they didn't want to deal with this. But now we don't know what James Jones is thinking because he hasn't done anything other than wave Isaiah Kanan.
So to finish on what I was saying, trying to make my succinct point and then failing to, because I never can do this in my life because this is my brain and how it works and people see it. Anywho, cap ceiling, you need someone to come in and help Booker.
Yes.
I believe that has to come through a trade still.
Yeah.
With that being said, to move on, in the Clippers game in the first half, Booker was point book for only the first 5, 6, 7 minutes of the game. Elie Okobo came in, completely changed things. I tweeted 2 or 3 different times, who is the other guy not named Devin doing stuff off the dribble? Someone just set up Booker for a catch and shoot 3. What is going on? Okobo was doing point guard things. Jamal Crawford was doing them as well. He's done that in little stints here and there, but when you combine that together, what you've got is point book asking point book not to be point book for only 10-15 minutes a game, which is the goal.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it was great to see. With that being said, all of that depends on how well Elie Okobo is playing, and that is going to fluctuate throughout the season. But the most interesting thing last night was, even in summer league, even in the preseason, even in the spots we saw him in the regular season, we never saw his scoring, the ways of his game that made everyone so excited about him, and me ranking him in the top 20 was his scoring and his feel for that. We never really saw that.
No.
And we finally saw it last night. He was a 3-level scorer. He scored from the mid-range. He scored from 3. He scored at the rim. He had 2 great plays with Rashawn Holmes where it's like, yes, Rashawn is begging for someone to run a 2-man game with him off this bench right now because it's there. He understands how to rim run very well.
Yeah.
And it was just great to see. And I think Okobo has already, off that performance alone, earned the backup point guard minutes. Do I think they should start him with Booker? Let's wait and see for a couple more weeks. But for now, it's just great to see, like I said 4 times already, that someone else is able to do the dribbling and the passing and the shooting besides Devin.
I think you brought it up a while ago, like right after the draft, where it was like Mikal Bridges is like the glue kind of thing where he's going to bring like Ayton, Booker, maybe Jackson together. And he's actually been huge. Even if he scores 0 points and he's struggled to like just get looks even the last few games since he's been inserted in that starting lineup. But his ability to defend 1 through 3 and sometimes 1 through 4 has been super huge because that allows them to put Booker on whoever they want, or at least they have more options where Booker defends. It's obviously spacing and all that good stuff, but even if Mikal doesn't really score defensively, he's just as important as having a starting point guard. So that's I don't think what people talk enough about when they talk about this lineup, because look, if you have Josh Jackson being able to do that, then Josh Jackson would be in that lineup, and it doesn't matter whether he can't shoot. He would at least help you on defense, but he can't do those things right now, and Mikal can. So I think that's huge into allowing Ellie even to come off the bench still. So we're kind of in flux right now as far as seeing how long these things can last, I think. Do you want to... any more on that? You want to move on to Fultz?
I think we should mention Josh Jackson quickly. I think the bad jumpers are just going to be a thing. We have to look past them.
He's been better.
But he's been better overall, and there's less of the jumpers, more of the hustle plays. Yes, he's going to have a transition drive where he's running 300 miles an hour, and if he just cut it back to like 175 instead, he would be fine and be able to make the layup instead of missing it. It's coming along. It's weird because he looks like the very raw young player who doesn't understand what he is yet when he plays. And that's the exact opposite read I had of him coming out of college. I thought it was very clear what he was, and it seemed like through his play he understood what he was, minus the jumpers. And if he can play with that same energy night in and night out off the bench, I know Rashawn Holmes is going to bring it in game 60. They could lose every single game from now until game 60. Rashawn Holmes is still going to play that way probably.
Yeah.
I don't know about Jackson, but if he does with Holmes, that just spreads on a team. It just spreads when you have two guys out there who care that much and play that much. And there were moments in the Clippers game where even if it was a 15-point game during that stretch, they were making energy plays left and right. I think there was like a lob pass at the rim by someone and Jackson came on the weak side help and just jumped and tipped it out of the way. And they got running. Those types of plays just keep happening with that second unit. Now they've got a real identity on the second unit. And if they have that on the second unit with how the starters have played lately, now you're really on to something. And I think that is where Jackson is the swing guy for me with what I was saying earlier for a cap ceiling. If he can actually be a consistent player who positively contributes to this game, to the team every night, they can actually really go on a run here in the second half of the season, I think. But they also need him to stay consistent, and Mikal Bridges cannot make a shot right now. And the reality with players like him who are in the, I was going to say in the Bender camp, but that's not fair to Bridges, but in the role player field,
yeah,
of you shoot threes, you play really good defense,
you make smart plays,
you're going to play. You have to hit your shots.
Yeah.
And so Mikal's just going to play 14 minutes some nights if he's not hitting shots and looking like a rookie at some points, which is completely fine because he's a rookie. But if those two guys consistently bring it for the rest of the season, this team can go a lot further than I think any of us can really expect right now, given that they're 4-17 and they have the worst record in the NBA.
My whole thing is they'll have a chance if, like, it's just weird. The very first game of the season, everyone played well. TJ played well off the bench. Josh played great off the bench. Book was obviously great. Kanan, I think, played well in that opener. DeAndre played well. It's just weird that there haven't been more of those nights where just, say, four guys play well and have 15 points. Like, they just need more of that. And they're getting closer to that. And if the defense is there, then maybe they're in a good spot. You're laughing.
Twitter is amusing sometimes. Good job, Twitter.
Let's move on.
Go Fultz. Yeah, let's do it.
Kellen wrote a thing about Markelle Fultz. Kellen thinks it'd be possibly a good idea to get Markelle Fultz. Okay, where should we start? Should we just start? I'll just preface this by saying we don't know what's up with him because he has to get these specialists to look at him, whatever that means, and see if it's mental, physical. Let's just pretend that he comes out clean and is just like, all right, he needs to rest his shoulder or something. And the reports already are that the Sixers, he might want to move on, right? So let's just say he's on the block and it's not a mental thing. Should we go with that assumption and just say he is what he is? I don't know how to approach it either because it's like, well, he might not be playing for
you
a while.
You have to take an approach at some point with him, and the approach that I took in the piece was that let's just take him for what he is right now without the jumper and assume that he's never able to shoot from beyond 14 feet again. Let's just assume that. What you've got is a guy who is extremely athletic, plays hard, understands when to be aggressive, but you've still got the mental block. You've still got the Dragan Benderitis where some plays it's like, what are you doing? He just looks lost at some points. But I think there is really something there with a guy who can attack off the dribble and can pass out of those situations as well, make the simple play. He is 1,000,000% exactly what the Suns need in that regard. That was the main point. I probably didn't make enough in there, was that they need someone who is attack, 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 but can make good decisions most of the time when they're doing that. Even Booker is growing in that department. He's grown a lot, which is, I think, what you were hitting on there from year three to year four. But I think Fultz can actually do that. So his strengths are exactly what this team needs. And I believe one of his strengths is as a defender, where he's been not great to pretty average. And by not great, I mean slightly below average to average. He's been okay, and he has a chance to be good. Because the most important thing to realize about Fultz is you see these stories and you just assume, oh, it's some mopey kid who just sits there and doesn't emote and doesn't do anything. He plays really hard. He seems to enjoy it there. He seems to enjoy his teammates from everything that we've seen.
Yeah.
And everyone supports him. Everyone loves him in that organization. It just has not worked out for him. So with that being said, I think if that guy is available for a low price, the Suns should at least entertain it. That's where I landed. Now, if his price is a legitimate asset, which I don't think it is because of how much money he makes, no thank you. But if you can get him for the fill-in money in that deal, which is something like Bender, Troy Daniels, and your second-round pick this year, if you can get him for that, I would do it.
I think Keith Pompey, I hope I'm saying his last name right.
Pompey, perhaps.
It could be.
We'll find out.
Like the place.
He'll come at us. He listens.
I think he suggested even like an Ariza swap because they could actually use Ariza and Markel Fultz's salary is like half of his. So maybe you work out something there, but we won't really talk about that because I don't think we're at the point where we should even bother because we don't know what's up with him. But to me, the biggest issue is just, if we're at a spot where the Suns, like, why don't they just re-sign Elfrid Payton? Like, and I know it's a new front office, but it's kind of the same thing. They're kind of the same player. They can't shoot as well as most guys. Theoretically should defend, but can play make and take stuff off Booker. And that's the biggest thing. So, yeah, it's tough. Like, I just feel like we're so many degrees off. My mind is like blocking from thinking about this working. If you put him on this team, what do you do? Do you just move Mikal back to the bench and then maybe start him next to Book so he doesn't, that shooting issue is not that much of an issue?
I would start him and move Mikal to the bench, which is going to infuriate everyone. But look, I'm completely fine with Trevor Ariza starting the rest of the year and Mikal Bridges starting next year. I don't think it's that big of an issue.
No.
What I think you get out of this is relief for Booker, first of all. I think that's important. And you get another presence on the ball with that. I think that's really all this is. He could be 27, and I would say I would feel
the right
a similar way. Because, I mean, if he plays awesome and then he plays awesome and you keep his fourth year option and he's restricted, I guess he could have a long-term future, but I picture this going, he plays fine, he's whatever, you decline his fourth year option, he's an unrestricted free agent, you have him here for a year and a half. That's how I picture it, and I think they need some sort of relief now, which is what we just talked about. And there's not really a great match at this point. I think Terry Rozier is going to continue to be a name to watch until it's not, because all indications are the Celtics are not going to re-sign him, and all indications are everyone knows this.
Yeah.
So trading him makes a whole lot of sense, especially with what's going on with them right now.
Yeah.
It feels like they could use a shakeup anyway. So I just think that he's at least worth discussing. I don't think you can just throw him out and say he's broken, he can't play. He can play.
Yeah.
But where do you draw the line as an organization and look at yourself and say, we're not the right situation for this kid?
That is what's interesting, because Keith, I'll just call him Keith, reported that, like Gambo, that the Suns are interested, but he said they're the Suns camp actually had reservations regarding his support system. What that means, especially before the draft, how I read it was that was before the draft. If his support system before the draft and before all this craziness about his shoulder was a concern, which I don't know why it would be, because I haven't seen any reason other, like, he seems like a great kid from everything I've read, learned about him doing draft prep way back when he's at Washington, then that's a concern. If you are concerned about your organization and you're the Suns, and even if you don't have the self-awareness to realize you might not be the best situation just because you're the Suns, then maybe it's not. But going back to your point too about just his fit, like, I think I was the very, let's just get Avery Bradley here or Patrick Beverley here to be next to Book.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
Those guys, now that I think about it and have watched this team, those guys wouldn't help this team very much either, because they don't have that. They don't have enough offensive skill to take that pressure off Book. Like, having a defensive-minded point guard, I just talked about it. Mikal's kind of doing a good job. They're figuring it out. They're decent. The bigger issue is offense, and that's kind of where we're at right now, is you need ball handlers, man.
To go back to what you were talking about with Beverly and Bradley, the clear mark of when improvement is going to come for this team is when they don't have a drastic need, because it's hard to remember, but there was a time where we were like, they need shooters, they need shooters, they need shooters, they need defense, they need defense, they need defense. They got Trevor Reeves and Mikal Bridges, and all of a sudden, and TJ Warren starts shooting much better too, and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, good. Got a lot of shooting. The defense remains to be seen. Ariza's been good. Bridges has been good. But their bench right now is Eli Okobo and Jamal Crawford in the backcourt, which is not going to help. And who knows with Josh Jackson. I think he's at least trying really hard. And now it's the ball handler thing. And I think once they get that sorted out, that's why it feels like this team is so close, because there is no huge gaping weakness. Their rebounding numbers are pretty bad right now, but I think that's just something for them to attack in different ways, and it doesn't have to do with roster construction necessarily. That's just another problem for another day. They've got enough as it is.
Yeah.
I think it's very important to end on Fultz with what you just talked about and what Pompey brought up, because the reporting from The Athletic earlier in the month about Fultz, which was in my piece, I think was very telling, that some days his shoulder and wrist are fine. Some days they're not, apparently. That is concerning. The Sixers were not informed of any reason he wouldn't be medically able to play, but that's exactly what's happening right now. He's not playing because they're checking on his shoulder. That is concerning too. So what it appears to be is that his camp and the Sixers have a sloppy relationship. And what the Suns do not need right now is another sloppy thing like this.
Yeah.
So if they approach this and they look at his camp and his agent and his lawyer, who is the same as his agent, and they do not think it's going to work, then that's completely fine with me. I completely agree with that. But if they see this and they can come to in agreement with his representation, which is another huge problem I have with this, the fact that it can't just be the kid. You can't just talk to Markelle Fultz, and it always has to be his camp, because that's all we hear about is his camp and not
Kawhi's
what he has
camp
to say. Yeah, exactly. Same
I don't
kind
have
of thing.
A camp.
Yeah,
a camp.
Kawhi, do you want to stay in Toronto? No, you have to talk to Kawhi's 400 people or whatever.
His uncle or whatever. Yeah.
It's the same thing with this, and I believe that's another issue in where this gets more complicated, and I wrote 1,600 words on it, so I didn't need to add another 400 about that. But that's another point that I would have made and would have gone on to explain that I believe for the right price, this is worth it. But we can't ignore the money of this. He makes over $8 million this year. He makes over $9 million next year. And that's a slight handcuff of your flexibility in the offseason where they want to really go after a couple big free agents. So,
yeah. Plus, that's not even thinking about the Sixers probably want something in return that's pretty good for a number one pick that's just a year.
They've got to worry about saving face, too.
Yeah.
So
there's so many, like, of all, like, trade, like, we talk about all these things, like, Terry Rozier's was small potatoes compared to this. This is, like, I don't even know where to start. There are probably 10 different issues when talking about possibly trading Markelle Fultz.
If Jackson keeps playing this way from now until December 15th, I think I would be okay with getting rid of Trevor Ariza, and I think that's the type of deal that makes a lot of sense from what you just said, because the Sixers can say, I don't have to really say anything. It's like, we tried.
Yeah.
We tried. Now we have this guy who is really going to help our group right now win a championship. Because that's the stage you're at right now with Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid playing like he has arguably been the MVP of the league through 20 games. So I think that's where the deal could work. But from the Suns' perspective, you have to value what Ariza brings you right now, because this is a gamble. It is a big risk, but what we just talked about for 6 or 8 minutes there is why I wrote about it. I thought it was super interesting and so many different angles for it to come from, but they need another guy to dribble the ball and do the stuff. Even if Elie Okobo can do it off the bench, I think you still need someone else. And one more thing was, Fultz is 20 years old, so now you've got your starting backcourt is 20 and 21, or your point guard rotation is 20, 21, and then Melton as well, which isn't great either. So there's just a lot of things to unpack. I think December 15th is interesting. I just keep coming back to it and think that there's an Ariza deal somewhere already.
Yeah.
This is how I have to think. This is how I have to think to get here. They play Orlando on Friday. That's going to be another game where you look at it and say, yeah, they'll have a shot. But Orlando is playing much better. Nikola Vucevic is a three-point marksman now.
Yeah.
The NBA is great.
He's low-key been really good. We are on Spotify, we hope. We are on iTunes, we hope you can find us. Hit us up on Twitter. Check us out on arizonasports.com. Kellen will meet with his camp, and I'll meet with my camp, and then we'll have another podcast next week.
They'll tell you when it is. Not us.
Not us.